Good to see everybody as we've assembled ourselves together again this Lord's Day to worship our Father in heaven. Again, grateful for the many visitors that we have had in both services today. Hope that you would come back and be with us again the next time that you have an opportunity. I want to very quickly say thank you to our song leaders today, to David this afternoon, Jason Blackaby this morning, and the manner in which they've led us in our worship services. And to Jason Davis for teaching our class this morning in the auditorium. Appreciate that so very much. I want us to consider the subject of where are the dead and what the Bible has to say about this subject. There is a tract that has been written by a faithful gospel preacher who's passed away a few years ago named Eugene Britnell, in which he addresses this subject. I've made some copies of this, and they'll be available up here on the front pew. I'll try to get some back in the back as well, and we can make more copies if we need to. That's not an outline of the sermon tonight. That's simply material that he's written on this subject. And if you'd like further study after listening and studying together this hour, I would encourage you to get a hold of this tract and to read it and to study it. But as with everything else, let's go with what the Bible has to say. Let the Bible be the final word on this question. Where are the dead? There can be different things that would motivate us to ask this question and to seek an answer to the question. One, curiosity about things that we don't know or don't understand. Sometimes we have a natural tendency to gravitate towards that, an interest in the unknown. It could be concern for loved ones who have passed away. And we wonder, we have hope for them, but we wonder about that. We have questions about where they are now. And when we contemplate our own mortality, where are we going to end up? What's going to happen to us? When we close our eyes in death, what will we experience? Where will we be when our eyes open again? And so it's only natural to have questions about this. And if we're left to our own speculations, and if we're left to ourselves to fill in the gaps and to come up with answers, we can fall victim to fanciful ideas and doctrines that contradict what the Bible has to say on this subject. And there are some things the Bible has to say. A good number of people believe in ghosts and believe that disembodied spirits wander the face of the earth and haunt different houses or different places. Even some Christians, I've heard some Christians tell me that they believe in ghosts and believe in haunted houses. The Bible doesn't teach any such thing. We'll show that there is no such thing as disembodied spirits wandering the face of the earth. Reincarnation, as we studied world religions recently, how when you die and you finish up this life, you simply go on to another life. And depending on how well you lived here, now that's going to be your station in life and the next one to come. So different ideas come about from people looking places other than the Bible to try to find an answer to this most important question. No doubt there are some things about death and what lies beyond the grave that we will never know until we experience it ourselves. However, the Bible does address the subject. There are some places, a few in the Old Testament, primarily most of them in the New Testament, where the Bible pulls back the curtain for a brief glimpse of what lies beyond the grave and helps to address this subject and answer this question. There are some things that we can know about where we go when we die, and knowing gives us comfort. It gives us comfort regarding those who have gone before us. It gives us comfort regarding our own future and our own mortality. And it also gives us motivation to prepare ourselves for this time that is coming when our life here will come to an end. So let's take a look at what the Bible has to say about this subject. Let's start where we need to, and that is death. Where are the dead? Well, let's start here at death and what the Bible has to say about death. Number one, the Bible teaches that all of us will die. Hebrews chapter 9 and verse 27 says, "And as it is appointed for men to die once, but after this, the judgment." This is an appointment that every one of us is going to keep. As soon as someone is born into this life, one thing is certain, that individual will one day die. And that is the way of all the earth. That's what Joshua told his generation as he was preparing to die. He said, I'm going the way of all the earth. Everyone dies. The Bible defines death as a separation. Specifically, a separation of the physical body and the immortal spirit of man. James chapter 2 and verse 26. In this context, actually talking about faith and works, and how there must be a marriage, if you will, between faith and works. And without works, faith is nothing. Without works, faith is dead. And James uses this illustration or this fact, introduces this fact about physical death to make the point about faith and works. He says, for as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. And that ends his discussion on faith and works, but it introduces a completely different subject, and that is physical death. The Bible defines physical death as the time when the spirit leaves the physical body. We know in Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 7, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. So physical death occurs not when the heart stops beating, not when there's no longer brain activity. Physical death occurs when the spirit has left the body, and God has allowed the spirit to leave the physical body. What do we do with that body? Well, that body is cremated. That body is buried in the ground. That body is buried at sea. Any number of things can happen to the physical body, but the eternal part of man continues to exist. The question of the hour is where? We know where the physical body is at. Where's the spiritual part of man when he dies? Where does it go? That brings us to the subject of Hades. The Bible teaches that there is a place in the spiritual realm called Hades. This is the place of departed spirits. This is where the spirit of man goes when it is separated from the physical body at death. So we ask the question, where are the dead? The dead are in Hades. They are in the Hadean realm. In the Old Testament, this is called Sheol. Oftentimes, reading through the Psalms, reading in the book of Job, it'll talk about going into the grave and going into Sheol. And in the Hebrew language, that has reference to the place of the dead, where the dead go. In the New Testament, it is the word Hades, referring to the realm of the dead or the place of the dead. And one thing we have to consider as we're studying this subject, if we're studying from the King James Version, there's nothing wrong with this translation. It's a very good, very accurate translation in many ways. But the translators of the King James use the word, the English word, hell, to translate both the Greek word Hades and the Greek word Gehenna. And in the original Greek, these are actually referring to two different places, to do two different things. Gehenna is what we would recognize as eternal hell. It is that final place where those who are lost are going to end up. It is that lake of fire where the gnashing of teeth, where the fire is not quenched and the worm does not die, as Jesus taught in Mark chapter 9. So when we think about eternal hell, that's Gehenna. Hades is this place of departed spirits. And you have to, as you're reading, if you're reading the King James Version, you've got to pay attention to the context to see which is being talked about. It's made clearer in some of our newer translations where it's translated as Hades or it's translated as hell. The best teaching that we have in the Bible on the Hadean realm is the account of the rich man and Lazarus in Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 31. Now I want to turn and I want us to look at these verses. I'm going to read these verses. And as we do, again, this is familiar to some of us, but I don't want us to put our brains on autopilot as we read through it. School's been out for a while now, but let's put our thinking caps back on and let's follow along and let the scriptures here describe to us this spiritual place. And after we do so, then we're going to go through, look at some of the points we have on this slide and make some observations here. But in Luke chapter 16, verses 19 through 31, there was a certain rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day. But there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, full of sores, who was laid at his gate, desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores. So it was that the beggar died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's bosom. The rich man also died and was buried. And being in torments in Hades, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham afar off, and Lazarus in his bosom. Then he cried and said, Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. But Abraham said, Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, and likewise Lazarus evil things, but now he is comforted, and you are tormented. And besides all this, between us and you there is a great gulf fixed, so that those who want to pass from here to you cannot, nor can those from there pass to us. Then he said, I beg you therefore, Father, that you would send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, that he may testify to them, lest they also come to this place of torment. Abraham said to him, They have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them. And he said, No, Father Abraham, but if one goes to them from the dead, they will repent. But he said to him, If they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be persuaded, though one rise from the dead. Make some observations about this passage. Number one, this is not told as a parable. This is not told as a story. Jesus tells this as an event that has really happened. It's not introduced as a parable. It does not have the language of a parable. This is like unto that. It's told as a historical fact. And names are given. Names are given. And that doesn't happen in a lot of the parables. But names are given here. And that tells us this is an event. This has really happened. Jesus is talking about what lies, what happens beyond the grave. We learn that in this realm, in Hades, after death, there is a place for those who are righteous, and there is a place for those who are wicked. The part for those who are righteous is called Abraham's bosom in this account. In Luke chapter 23 and verse 43, Jesus tells the penitent thief on the cross, Today you will be with me in paradise. That would have to correspond to Abraham's bosom. That on that day, their spirits were going to depart from their physical bodies. That day, they would be in paradise. But the part for the wicked, where the rich man went, in our text, it's simply referred to as torments. He woke up and he was in torments. He was in the flame. In 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 4, a Greek word, tartarus, is used to describe where the angels have been sent in judgment to await their final destiny. And that corresponds again to this place of torment, a place where the wicked are punished. And of course, there are two conditions in the Hadean realm. The righteous are comforted, and the wicked are tormented in the flame. And as we look at the torment, I want you to think about this. Here, this rich man, he wakes up in torment. He looks and he sees Abraham. He sees Lazarus afar off. And look at what he requests in verse 24. Send Lazarus that he may dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I am tormented in this flame. I've never been so hot that I just wanted a drop of water. I've never been so hot and in so much turmoil and pain and heat that I'd be satisfied with just one drop of water. And yet, that's the request that is made here. But in making this request, he finds out that there's a gulf between the two, and that they can never leave. They can never depart. And that tells us that our fate is sealed at death. Despite what other groups teach, what other religions teach, that you can move from one to the other after death, that's not what the Scriptures teach. Wherever you end up, that's where you are for eternity. Notice that in the Hadean realm, this man was immediately aware of his condition, that he recognized Abraham and Lazarus. He could remember the events of his life. Look in verse 25, but Abraham said, "Son, remember that in your lifetime." That's one thing that we do take with us into torment, at least. I don't know about paradise, I don't know about Abraham's bosom, but in torment, the dead are able to remember what happened in their life. Remember the things that happened. Remember what you did. Remember so that you know what's happening to you now is what is just and what is right and what is fair. The rich man not only was aware of his condition and learned that he could never leave, but he was also remembering his father's house and remembering his brothers. And when he found out he could never leave, he wanted words sent to them so that they would not come and be with him there. I've heard people say, if my loved one dies and goes to hell, I want to go and be with them. I've got to tell you, despite the sentiment that may bring forth such a statement, that goes against what the Scriptures teach in this passage. Here's a man who was in torment, and he thought about his family and loved ones, and what he wanted desperately is that they not come to be with him. That they not come and share that torment with him for eternity. This is what we know about Hades. This is what we know about the condition of those who are dead. But Hades, as we continue to read the Scriptures, Hades is not a permanent place. Hades is going to hold the dead, is going to hold the spirits, the souls of those who are dead, until Jesus returns. As we read the Scriptures, look at the Scriptures, we learn that there are a number of very significant events that take place when the Lord returns. Number one, there is the resurrection of the dead. In our Bible reading a few moments ago from 1 Corinthians chapter 15, that entire chapter deals with the resurrection of the dead. By the way, this Wednesday in our 1 o'clock class, we're going to start our study of 1 Corinthians chapter 15. If that's of interest to you, we encourage you to come and to join us in that study as we look at that subject. I want to look at John chapter 5. In the Gospel of John chapter 5, verses 28 and 29. John chapter 5, verses 28 and 29. Jesus says, "Do not marvel at this, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice and come forth. Those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation." Jesus promised that there would be a future resurrection of all the dead. An hour in which all who are in the graves would come forth. Premillennialism teaches that there are any number of resurrections that are going to occur. A pre-tribulation resurrection, a post-tribulation resurrection, a post-millennial reign resurrection, many different. The Bible teaches there's one. Jesus says there's one. There's one hour in which everyone who is in the grave is going to hear his voice and going to come forth. Some to a resurrection of life and some to a resurrection of condemnation. Now, isn't it interesting that if where we go when we die now is our permanent dwelling place, isn't it strange that we would go to our permanent dwelling place, heaven or hell, and then be raised to come back from it and then be sent right back to the same place? That seems strange to me. Hadean realm is temporary. And those who are called forth from that are called forth for judgment, as we'll see, and then will be sent to the permanent eternal abode that corresponds with their sentence of comfort or of condemnation, of life or of condemnation. In 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verses 13 through 18, this is another good passage of Scripture that we have that talks about the resurrection, talks about the second coming of Christ. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 13 through 18. "But I do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, concerning those who have fallen asleep, lest you sorrow as others who have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, Even so, God will bring with Him those who sleep in Jesus. For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will by no means precede those who are asleep. So we see here, Paul's talking about those who are asleep. He's talking about those who are dead, because he corresponds or he contrasts them with those who are alive. They will no means precede those who are asleep, for the Lord Himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and with the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus we shall always be with the Lord. Therefore comfort one another with these words. So there's going to be a shout. There's going to be the voice of the archangel. There's going to be the trumpet of God. And then the dead are going to be raised incorruptible, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 teaches. After the resurrection of the dead, the Scriptures teach that there's going to be the destruction of the heavens and the earth. In the book of 2 Peter, I would encourage you to turn to 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 10 through 13. 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 10 through 13. As we're turning to this passage, I want to address a question that may arise. You know, preacher, we've been going here and there in the Bible and looking at different passages. How do I know you're not going to your favorite passage and just pulling it out of context and trying to prop up what you're teaching? We need to understand the Bible is not given to us like an encyclopedia, where if you have a question about what happens after death, well, you turn to this entry and it's going to describe everything there. Now, the Bible is the mind of God that has been revealed unto man, been revealed in different stages, in different steps. As we said this morning, 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 15, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed before God, rightly dividing, handling accurately the word of truth. What we're doing is we're taking everything the Bible has to say on this subject, the return of Christ, where we go after we die, and we're laying it out. We're laying it out, and we're looking at how the Bible as a whole addresses this question. In the book of 2 Peter, chapter 3, the Apostle Peter is addressing, better than anywhere else in the Bible, the destruction of the physical universe at the end of time. The destruction of the heavens and the earth. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of persons ought you to be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God? Because of which the heavens will be dissolved, being on fire, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Nevertheless, we, according to His promise, look for a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. I want us to notice a few things about this passage. First, the Scriptures teach that at the end of time, the physical universe will come to an end. And this fire that burns is a destroying fire. It's not a purging fire. It's not a fire that cleanses the creation of wickedness and returns it to a pre-fall state in Eden in Genesis chapters 1 and 2. It is a fire that destroys. Notice in verse 12, the world is going to come apart, the physical universe is going to come apart at the atomic level. The elements are going to melt. They're going to unfashion. They're unfastened from each other. This physical world is going to be done away with. And then we have a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells in verse 13. I want to point out two things about the new heavens and the new earth. Number one, as Jehovah's Witnesses and other groups teach, heaven is not going to be here on this physical earth. They want to come to a passage like this and say, see, it's just a purging, it's just a cleansing, but except for the 144,000 that get to go to heaven, the rest of us are going to have heaven here on this earth. A new heavens and a new earth is a way of speaking of a new plane of existence. Where does man live? Where does man exist? The only thing that we have in our minds, the only thing that we can grasp, the only concept we have is we live on the earth. We live under the heavens. We live on the earth. That's where man exists. Well, when we get to the end of time and we begin eternity, this place where we exist is going to be gone. There's going to be a new place of existence. What better way to refer to it than the new heavens and a new earth? A new place in which we dwell. A new place in which we exist. Don't get caught up on this being a physical heaven, a physical earth. No, it's simply a new place for us to dwell. And notice this also. If we go immediately upon death, we go to where we're going to spend eternity, then there is no room for this new heaven and this new earth. Because it doesn't come into existence until the end of this world. Until this earth comes to an end, then that future, eternal abode comes into existence. And that's not going to happen until after this physical is done away with. So we need to bring that into our equation as well. One does not come into existence until the other one ceases to exist. Now, with the destruction of the heavens and the earth, the Bible teaches the next event will be judgment. Turn to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation chapter 20, verses 11 through 15. The book of Revelation is a book of signs and symbols. It is a book that conveys a message not through words of narrative, but through pictures, visions that John sees. Here's a vision that he sees of judgment, but it's not hard to get the message. It's not hard for us to see what is being communicated. Revelation chapter 20, start at verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away. Notice the destruction of the heavens and the earth. They're gone. They fled away. They're gone. And there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. Where did they come from? The resurrection. They've been raised, standing before God. And books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works, by the things which were written in the books. The sea gave up the dead who were in it, and death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one according to his works. Now look here in verse 13. The sea gave up the dead who were in it. Now that could be literally the physical sea, that is, those who were buried at sea or lost at sea. There are some who find comfort in this passage, knowing that their loved ones were lost at sea. In the book of Revelation, the word sea has reference not to the physical sea, but it has reference oftentimes to the sea of humanity, just to the state of humanity. Here in this mass of people that God has created, the dead are going to come forth from them. But look at what is stated next in verse 13. Death and Hades delivered up the dead who were in them. And that's what happens at the resurrection. Death takes the physical body. Hades takes the eternal soul. When death occurs, we put the body in the grave, and the soul goes to the Hadean realm. In the resurrection, they're reunited. They're brought back together, and they're brought before God. And notice in the very next verse, verse 14, then death and Hades are cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. And anyone not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. This is the end of time. Death has been conquered. Death has been defeated. Death will claim no other person. The Hadean realm has served its purpose. It has kept the souls of those who are departed from the very beginning. Those who are righteous in paradise, in Abraham's bosom. Those who are wicked in torment. They've kept those souls. But now, at the resurrection, there's no longer a purpose for them. No longer a purpose for the Hadean realm. They give up the dead that are in them, and it's destroyed. The Hadean realm is destroyed in the lake of fire. This would be what we would call Gehenna. This is where the devil and his angels are sent for eternity. And this is where those who are lost, those whose names are not found in the book of life, they are cast into the lake of fire. So the Bible teaches that the Hadean realm, it is real, it exists, it serves a purpose, but it one day will come to an end when it empties itself of all the souls that it has claimed. Then, after judgment, eternity will begin. And when we go to Matthew chapter 25, we have before us a scene of judgment very similar to what we read in Revelation chapter 20. Matthew chapter 25, starting at verse 31, when the Son of Man comes in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then He will sit on the throne of His glory. That's what John saw in Revelation 20, right? A great white throne, and He who sat upon it, from whose face the heaven and the earth fled away. Now verse 32, all the nations shall be gathered before Him, everyone. Everyone who has ever lived. The grave is going to give forth its dead. Hades will give forth its dead. Everyone will be brought before Him and will be separated from one another. The day of judgment is not going to be like our day in court. Some have a misconception about this. The day of judgment will be when we get to bring our case before God and we get to make the case for why we belong in heaven. No, we do that now. We do that in the life that we live now. In the comics this morning in the Sunday paper, you know, the intellectual section, the comics. In Family Circle, there's one of the cartoons there is the grandmothers taking the grandchildren to church services, and the sermon that morning they were going to hear was thoughts about the hereafter. And the grandma just simply says to the children, the after depends on the here. And I like that. Wherever we go after is going to depend on what we do here and now. Judgment Day is not going to be our day in court. Judgment Day is going to be a day of sentencing. A day of universal sentencing in which God, before everything that He has created, is going to pass final judgment and final sentence, final act of righteousness in which everything that exists is going to know why people are going where, is going to know why God is justified in doing so. It is a final day of His righteousness. Look at verse 46 as this scene comes to an end. These will go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into eternal life. Eternity will begin. You know, the interesting thing about this, from the passage that we read, that we had read for us, Jordan read for us in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, this is all going to happen in a moment. It's all going to happen in the twinkling of an eye. Hollywood might like to get a hold of this script and might like to make a 2 or 3 hour movie about all these events, but the Bible says it happens that fast. The Lord's going to return, dead are going to be raised, judgment will occur, heaven and earth vanish away, eternity will begin just like that. Might be hard for us to think about how that can be done, but remember, this will be God's doing, and nothing is too hard for God. Now let's take these passages that we've looked at, the points that we've looked at, and let's look at this chart. I didn't make this chart. There's one similar to it in the handout that you're welcome to take. And this covers, just very briefly, covers what we have talked about in our study this evening. That death will occur. All men are going to die. The body will go into the grave, but the soul of man will go into the Hadean realm. Those who are righteous, those who are saved, are going to be in paradise. In Abraham's bosom, those who are lost are going to be in torment. They're going to be in the flame, and their fate will be sealed. There's the great gulf that will separate them. When the Lord returns, there's going to be the resurrection of the dead. All are going to come forth from the grave. There's going to be the destruction of the heavens and the earth. There's going to be judgment, and at that time, Hades is going to be destroyed. It has served its purpose. It is no longer needed. It will be destroyed. And we will have a new heavens and a new earth in which we will dwell, in which righteousness dwells. Eternity will begin after judgment. Those who are lost will be told, depart from me, I know ye not, and they will go to an eternal fire. But those who are saved, the Lord is going to take them Himself and is going to deliver the kingdom unto the Father in heaven. 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and at verse 24. What's life about? What's the meaning of life? What's the purpose of life? I tell you very simply, very plainly, it's about getting right there. Because if we miss that, we've missed it all. Well, no, there's always this.
There's always that option. That's what life is about. Getting back to the tree of life that was lost there in the beginning because of sin. Getting back to the presence of God. Getting back to where the Father is. Where are the dead? We need an answer to that question. We need to know for the sake of our loved ones, for our own peace of mind. But we also need to know for ourselves. But we're not dependent upon ourselves for an answer, because the Bible tells us what awaits us. While there are some specific questions that are never going to be answered on this side of the grave, we are assured of some things. We are assured of the Hadean realm. We are assured of the resurrection and of judgment. We are assured of eternity. There will be no opportunity for us to change our fate once we have died or once the Lord has returned. When we hear that trumpet, that's going to be the end. That is why the Scriptures place such urgency upon obeying the gospel and making our lives right with God. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 2, "For he says, in an acceptable time I have heard you. In the day of salvation I have helped you. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation." If you're here and you're not yet a Christian, you need to become one. And you need to become one now, because you know we have no guarantee of tomorrow or even tonight. If you're here and you are a Christian, but you realize your life is not right with God, there should be that same sense of urgency for you to make things right with God, so that you can pillow your head tonight without any worry, without any thought, without any turmoil, knowing that regardless of what may come, you're right with God. If we can help you with that, we'd be glad to do so. Let us know by coming forward as we stand and sing this song.